You are listening to a Shine Light podcast production. Everyone has a Jeff Buckley story. And now your host, Jeff Haley.
Today we have an old friend and a terrific drummer who has played with some top-notch bands. More on that in a moment. Before we start, I should explain some of the connections in our circle, as guest J.J. Johnson puts it. In the 90s, J.J. played in a trio with guitarist Billy White. Billy's girlfriend back then was my dear friend Pam Miller, who also happens to be the person that introduced me to Jeff Buckley's drummer, Matt Johnson. Another interesting coincidence is that David Garza, the frontman of my band Twang Twang Shaka Boom, is the one who introduced Billy White to J.J. And I have an announcement for you. We are going to have Matt Johnson himself on our podcast in November, so keep listening. Thanks so much for making it to episode 3. Click follow or subscribe and tell your friends. And now everyone has a Jeff Buckley story.
I'm talking to J.J. Johnson, and we used to play jazz together in Austin, Texas. And J.J. has played with John Mayer and Tedeschi and Trux Collective. And for the past few years with Gary Clark Jr., one of the premier gunslingers in the world. And we have on our little podcast, I want to ask JJ a question. Around 2005, I went to a bar with our friend Conrad Meisner, and we sat down at the bar, and the bartender came up to us and said, "What's your Jeff Buckley story? Everyone has a Jeff Buckley story."
That's interesting. But that's funny, though. That's a bit presumptuous, I will say that. But I get it. It's someone who really loved what he did as an artist, because it's just so universal and it was just so fresh. But my Jeff Buckley story was, it's really interesting because I remember the details of the first time of listening to Grace. I was just getting to know who's now one of my dearest and old friends, Billy White, who, when I was kind of getting to Austin, I grew up mostly in San Antonio, and then when I left home, I went to New Orleans for about a year. And then so coming back to Texas, Austin seemed like the place to pick back up in. So, and not really knowing what I was going to do other than just some of the random gigs that I was doing or be called for. But David, I had given Billy White, David Garza, my number because he was looking to start a new project. Like he was wanting to do a trio. And so, and of course I was very aware of Billy, you know, over the years and, you know, how amazing he was and a fan of some of the things that he was involved in when I was in high school.
Were you a Watchtower fan?
I definitely was. So I saw him play a number of times. So it was at that point, it was like, Billy White wants to play with me, you know, or is even interested in being a band. I was over the moon about that. And I had so much respect for him as a musician. And he also just was a really sweet dude. And so we finally got together. We were just hanging out. And it was a really special time. Like, he was really turning me on to all these things. And, you know, he loves so much music. And I think it was right around when that record had come out, as we were talking, he's like, "Have you heard this guy, Jeff Buckley?" I was like, "No." He's like, "Oh man, you have to hear this record. It's amazing." So we went back to his place and we sat in this room. It was like middle of the afternoon. It was just like, Billy's also had such a, you know, peaceful vibe in his space that he keeps. So we put it on and I just sat there and just proceeded to be transported to some place I didn't expect at all. It wasn't much talking. I was just sitting there, just taking it all in and having my mind blown away and just getting goosebumps, you know, through the end of the record. Was, I think it finishes with Dream Brother, I believe.
Yeah, that's such an amazing way to finish it.
And it's just like, after the smoke clears, you know, you're kind of just like, I was left breathless.
Don't be like the one who left behind
never heard anything like that before. And the way so many different elements of music were used together, and then also that voice. I was just blown away. And so it set me on a journey. It really made me start to think about music, particularly, you know, rock music and what else is possible. And also the beauty, once again, the beauty of intense, simple but intense playing, very much serving the music and just orchestration, all these things that were coming to mind after repeated listens. It's still very inspired body of work. So that was a game changer. You know, it also was kind of like an interesting blueprint in terms of how to approach looking at music. You know, the thing that happens with most people, that you find something that you're really moved by, your tendency is to try to replicate that, which, you know, everybody, almost particularly any musician, like in their own sort of way, was kind of doing that, you know, or it was kind of apparent, but without blatantly doing it, but ultimately you find your own thing and understand where the impetus of it was coming from. So that was interesting for us, particularly at that time, getting started with the unit and trying to write music and think about how we wanted to present the music, and those things kind of just teaching lessons in as well, you know, particularly playing in a trio, you know, like a rock trio. But, you know, 'cause there's a bit of playing you have to do to kind of fill things out between three people, having some interplay and conversation, but without it being busy, you know, all those things were kind of very, very strong and coming clear.
When you were just talking, fast forward 5 years to, I believe, like 2000, we recorded with Pam and Billy in New York on Pam's, I guess, her last record, really. And it was the same kind of thing where Pam, I mean, Billy's there with her, but Pam was very influenced by Jeff Buckley as well.
Yeah. No, so many people, it's like, particularly in the circles, it was just like, it was just infectious, you know? And it was also that nice thing to do for such a great piece of work to share, introduce somebody who had not, for whatever reason, heard it. It was like, have you ever, like, oh, I can't wait to play this record for you, or for you to go pick it up, check it out. It's, you know, it was one of those things that had to be done just out of common good, you know, to share that with the world, because it was just so amazing.
Chris did the same thing with me.
Yeah. And it was just, I love to hear and see people's reaction, you know, after experiencing that. It's just like, yeah, it's so powerful and it's beautiful and elegant, but also just raw. And then after that, I don't know how long it was after that record came out, but but it seemed like there was a period where he was actually coming to Austin quite a bit, which I was very fortunate, because I got to see him at least two times, and then maybe short performances. Like anytime he was in town, like that was coming to town, like that was, everything stopped. Like it didn't matter what was going on. Like I wasn't going to miss the opportunity to bear witness to it.
I believe he did an in-store at, I know he did one at Tower Records, and I think he did one at Waterloo Records also.
I saw both of those. The actual first performance that I saw was at the Waterloo in-store. So that was just sort of a little teaser for the show that night, which I believe they played at Electric Lounge, which, for any of you kids out there, it's a no more. It's like it never existed.
Liberty Lounge also, that was the last show, I think.
Yeah. Yes. No. Get out of there. I saw the Electric Lounge show, and mine was blown even further. Like, I've never seen anything like this where you know, right before the show, like everyone's, you know, there's a lot of anticipation and there's all that chatter. And then just hearing that the crowd just, he started out with sort of, you know, he started with Mojo Pan, but just the vocal intro that he did. And when he first started singing and accompanying himself on guitar, like how quickly that room just came to a whisper or not, or just complete silence. That much control and how, I mean, just immediately, and it was just, everyone was transfixed. Yeah, I'll never forget that. It was just, and then they proceeded. The show was amazing.
I have a set list right here. You ready?
Yeah.
Mojo Pin, but with that, the long intro that's just vocals called Chocolate.
Oh, yeah.
It's like 5 minutes. I think you can listen to a clip on the internet. And Last Goodbye, What Will You Say? Dream Brother, Lilac Wine, So Real. Grace, they started it and then they had problems with the mains and they...
That's right.
You remember what happened?
Did they turn them around?
They turned the monitors around. The
monitors around, that's right. That's another thing. It's like, okay, that's, you know, just like nothing will defeat us or get in the way of, you know, us playing music or performing for these people. I love that. That's also spoke to me as well. Like, you know, in certain cases with certain artists, I mean, they would just probably throw a fit and just like walk off the stage, you know. It was so beautiful to bear witness to that as well.
Kick Out the Jams, which I guess is their really loud song.
That's the MC5 cover, which I love that. That's like from that, I love it. It's got that like sort of punk rock energy, which is something I was all very much a fan of as well.
Okay. By the time they got to the Liberty Lunch show, it seems like that ethos was taking over, at least from Jeff's perspective.
No, it was amazing. And then, yeah. And then I also saw the Liberty Lunch show, which, and at that point I loved it because they were messing around with new material. And that's one of the things that's like, I know certain people have certain feelings about playing music for their audience that they're unfamiliar with. But as somebody who likes going to shows, like I always love that, you know, like if you already love what they're doing, I'm curious to hear about just new stuff, you know, by chance. Those things don't happen very often
right
these days, but it just, it was another, I was so excited to hear something that was, you know, it was like, oh wow, this is some new stuff or kind of hinting at another direction. I love that about that. So being able to see that, and I feel privileged to be able to see those shows and see him and the band perform live. It was just as intense and moving as the records, you know. It was so energetic. What are y'all doing? Look at these guys.
Oh, let me see. Oh, there they are. Hooligans.
Yes, they are hooligans. Do not get over there. You know what I mean? Stay off of my couch. Sorry.
No. This old man screams at cloud.
That's what I'm turning into, apparently. we're all going to go outside. How about that?
When I asked David if he wanted to throw in some two pennies to this podcast, he said that Jeff Buckley was an amazing soul singer and that he had a Texas rhythm section. He's given a lot of credit, I think, there. I'm giving a lot of credit, too, to Matt. Cause I don't think the other two guys are from Texas. Mick Grundle's from Texas.
No, I think he's Danish, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, and then Michael Ty, I feel like he's probably a New York native. I'm not sure. But yeah, Matt has a really, you know, he had a really different thing too, like as opposed to, you can think of any, if you could think of it, a number of other people that would sit in that seat, I don't know if anybody would come with what he brought to the table, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree. That's the way I see it.
You know, and there's something regional about what people do, you know? And, you know, there's even though a lot of those, the people, from some of the alumni that have come out of that school and have made major stamps in the world, you know, they feel there's still something reasonable about what they do, even though it's all different. They're all different individually, but, you know, there's something to that.
I think that for a lot of great bands, the iconic bands, and we got to put Jeff Buckley in there, is that the drummer really propels the excitement usually.
Yeah, absolutely. And he did. I mean, he was like whooping ass. By the time I saw them at Liberty Lunch, it was just like, you know, also Matt had gotten like much bigger drums and stuff, and like really leaning more into like that thing, and that, you know, projecting more of a bigger, fatter kind of a sound. But I think initially he had more kind of jazz influence in terms of the way he tuned his instrument. Which I thought
used to sizzle beautiful. Sometimes, I think.
Yeah. And also just the way he tuned the toms, they were a little bit more raised in pitch, and they sang in that way rather than sort of like a doom, like more of a doom, like they sang a little bit more on resonance and a little higher pitch. But also he was very melodic too, the way he played, you know, like a lot of, you know, obviously Mojo Pin has that thing because the conversation that goes on with the motif that he plays and with the toms, it sings in a certain way. I mean, it's such an integral part of that tune. It's like, that's something also, it's like, who would have thought to play something like that? You know what I mean?
There's that little part where he slows down kind of.
Oh, he drags the snare drum. It's like, That's awesome. That's a Dennis Chambers thing. So it's funny, like you hear a lot of his history and influence in some of the things, but he had a way of making it his own.
It's sort he's of like very integrated player.
Yes. Now he's an amazing, and apparently I've heard it seems like he's quite a, he's a great instructor too, from what I understood. But I do remember also the first I approached him. We didn't connect at that point. It was later down the line, but after the set that they did for the in-store at Waterloo, you know, I had to go up and just, you know, share my appreciation for his artistry, and he was, you know, really humble guy and gracious.
I'm hoping to get him to talk to me. I knew him a little bit back in the day, and he's such a nice guy too.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I love talking to you, and you've made me excited to go check out Mojo Pin for the 733rd time.
Who's counting?
There's a video of them playing it at Glastonbury.
And yeah.
Everybody's so on point, but Matt especially. Oh.
Yeah. Killing.
It's Goosebumps territory.
Yep.
Because the dynamics, like you said, it's so soft, and then at the end it's so loud.
No, it's like a, I mean, it's, yeah, it's just one of those pieces of music that is just like, the correct word is kind of eluding me at the moment. Just grand, you know. And that's one of the, you know, it's like, I love also how that band played. Just, you know, you could tell that they played on the edge, you know, every time. Didn't ever feel like things were going through the motions. You know, there was always some kind of fresh energy to each performance.
Yeah.
And that's another inspiring thing to keep in mind, like, not that you wouldn't, but having experienced that kind of a feeling or witnessing it, it's just like, if you want to project to people, like, that's probably a good way to go about it, you know. And that level of being present the way that they were, it's in between, far, far above of, you know, your average performer, you know, like what you get when you leave there. You get everything, you just don't leave anything. There's nothing left, you know?
Right.
By the end of the show.
That's the good
stuff. Yeah, I love that.
Alrighty, I will be in touch.
Yes, sir. So good to see you, John.
Good to see you too. Nice seeing your dogs too. Bye.
Born again from the rhythm,
screaming down from heaven. You've been listening to Shine Light Podcast. If you like what you've heard, please hit the subscribe button and tell your friends.